Welcome to Dry Coach podcast series, Click on Dry Eye, your insider pass to the most exclusive and innovative topics on dry eye disease. My name is Dr. Tracy Dahl.
And I'm Walt Whitley. Well, we're super excited for our first inaugural episode here. We're excited to have our great friend, Zach Denning, who's a director of, director of scientific and professional affairs from Science Based Health, to talk about ocular nutrition mythbusters. Welcome, Zach.
It's great to be here, guys. I'm really excited to be on the show.
All right. Before we can get started, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your role at Science Based Health?
Well, I'm a science geek by nature. I love reading clinical studies and kind of diving into the research. I've been with Science Based Health for over 20 years, and I've had really the privilege of sort of being in eye care from before when nutrition was really sort of well accepted. And seeing kind of the arc of that starting to become more and more integrated into kind of the standard of care, kind of in the wheelhouse of doctors every day. And also during that time, I've also sort of seen the progression of dry eye from when dry eye was, you know, little more than like hot washcloth and Restasis, to really seeing this kind of blossoming of all these new technologies, treatments, and better understanding about what dry eye really is. So it's been fun to be part of that, and this is something I love talking about. So really excited to discuss this with you guys.
Thank you so much for being able to open up the topic. Now, I really love to discuss things and bring up topics that a lot of other doctors ask me quite a bit when I'm lecturing and teaching. So one of the biggest questions that I want to bring to your attention, and maybe you can help us work through this, is omega-3 fatty acids. Are they in? Are they out? Can you talk to that? I know that when the DREAM study came out, that kind of got us all thinking a little bit differently about omega-3 fatty acids. Yeah. Can you comment on whether you think they're helpful or not?
Well, omega-3s are essential to our metabolism. We need them, and they play an important role. So I think, you know, this was really stirred up when the DREAM study was published, you know, that looked at omega-3s versus fish oil. And the results were completely baffling to most people, including me, really, and they still are in some ways. So this caused a lot of controversy and caused a lot of people to question them. So, you know, I do want to talk about omega fatty acids beyond just omega-3s from fish oil, which we'll get to. But let's talk about the DREAM study, because that's usually sort of the elephant in the room. And it's had a big part in kind of forming people's sort of opinions about omega-3s. And that study was a bit disappointing to a lot of people, because people were expecting this huge difference between fish oil and the olive oil that was used as placebo. And it really didn't shape up that way. I mean, everybody in the study improved. And we're still trying to kind of figure out exactly why that happened. So Penny Asbell has said that she thinks maybe it's a placebo effect, but it was what, you know, it's a really highly statistically significant effect. So that's, I don't know, I find that maybe kind of a stretch. But there's been a lot of confusion about that study. So I think it's first good to kind of clarify that. First of all, a lot of people assumed, as I did at the beginning, that the olive oil was an active treatment. But the olive oil that was used in DREAM was refined. It didn't contain those antioxidant polyphenols you'd find in the Mediterranean diet and so forth. And it was a very small amount. So it's hard to say exactly why the olive oil group improved. But what I can say is that by sort of lumping everyone in that study over 19, with, you know, kids looking at their phones too much, to people, you know, elderly people with Sjogren's, that you really have this kind of mixed group. And it was, I think it kind of muddied the study, and as well as allowing people to kind of change treatments as they go along. So, you know, I think that when we're trying to figure out what is the role of omega-3s, it's, you know, I don't think DREAM really clarified that a lot, to be honest. I do think we can say that they are helpful for dry eye. They're helpful for overall heart and overall body health. They play a role in macular health, a lot of diabetes. So we need them. They're anti-inflammatory, and they're great. But you know, we'll talk a little bit more about GLA, which is the omega anhydride, That's really different than the omega-3s in fish oil. And they didn't talk about that, or they didn't use it in DREAM, but it was discussed extensively in the DREAM protocol, something they really wanted to include, but just didn't have the funding for. So, you know, I think that's another area that, you know, we can talk about more.
Yeah, well, let's keep talking about there, Zach. As you just mentioned, there was some muddied waters from the DREAM study, but we do know that patients did improve on that. But you just mentioned GLA. And so GLA, we know, is omega-6. Tell us what's so special about it, because we know it gets a bad rap. Where does that fit into ocular surface disease? If you can comment on that.
Yeah. Well, we've all heard that omega-6s are bad, right? You know, they're pro-inflammatory. It's sort of the boogeyman of fatty acids in a way. But I think we've kind of oversimplified, because it's really actually just one omega, arachidonic acid that we get from meat and dairy, especially the American diet, that's really sort of responsible for that bad reputation. And we get almost all of that arachidonic acid, that bad omega-6, directly from our diet and not from other omega-6s. So GLA is an omega-6 that's more of a good omega-6. It's similar to EPA from the omega-3 family. It's anti-inflammatory, and it has a particular connection to tear production. It actually helps to stimulate lacrimal production as well as mucin production. It's been found to help with meibomian gland dysfunction. So it works in multiple ways that are sort of conducive to dry eye. And it also has some kind of qualities about it that make it sometimes kind of easier to use or more appealing to patients than taking fish oil. It's plant-based. You need very little of it. So you tend to have smaller capsules, as you do with Hydri. Generally, you get sort of less reflux, and you don't get the fish burp with it and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of things that make it more appealing to patients. And there's been a number of studies with GLA for dry eye, from post-PRK to Sjogren's, contact lens, MGD, and the Hydri clinical trial is one of those as well. So, you know, that study at Walt you were involved in found lower levels of inflammatory markers, improved symptoms, and smoother corneas measured with topography. So there's some good evidence for GLA as kind of a more dry eye specific omega. And when you combine that with a smaller amount of omega-3s and other nutrient cofactors, those really all work together to kind of stimulate tear production. So this is a completely different way of looking at omegas in dry eye. That's different than sort of the traditional just used fish oil, you know, and, you know, go out to Walmart and buy sort of a generic brand or something like that.
Hey, Zach, I want a follow-up question. So with GLA, is there a optimal dosage or optimal amount that we want for patients? Because, you know, we're hearing about this and several products have it now. So can you comment on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's very potent as an anti-inflammatory. And so, I mean, it's been found to reduce inflammatory markers with as little as 15 milligrams, which is fairly little. You know, generally, I think for dry eye, I think you're going to want a higher dose than that, over 200 milligrams, ideally. And it's also important that you have the right ratios of the different omegas, because when you have a ton of fish oil and a tiny bit of GLA, anything over 4-1 EPA and DHA to GLA, studies have found that you don't incorporate the GLA. And so therefore, essentially, it becomes label decoration, or you don't get a lot of benefit out of it. So for that reason, Hydri is a very specific ratio of the GLA to the omega-3s. And Hydri uses 235 milligrams of GLA, which is a pretty robust dose. I think that's probably kind of a good dose. A lot of products that have GLA have a much, much smaller dose and have a large amount of omega-3s. They're sort of trying to kind of get sort of best of both worlds, or, you know, latch onto lots of things that are popular, but they're not always sort of validated in terms of it delivering the ratios of ingredients in the way that's going to benefit the patient most.
So, Zach, I love how you commented on the right ratio of omega-6s to 3s. But I also know that there are some other important nutritional aspects, some other potential ingredients that should also be combined with our sixes and our threes to get them better absorbed. Can you comment on other vitamins that might support the correct absorption of sixes and threes?
Well, for GLA in particular, there's some nutrient cofactors that are required to convert it. And it has to be converted into a particular prostaglandin called PGE1 that's required for lacrimal production, as I mentioned, and mucin production. In order to produce a specific prostaglandin for GLA, you need vitamin C, which we also know is important. Like it, vitamin C levels are very high in the tears and dip after LASIK, and it plays a real strong role in the cornea. Magnesium and B6 also are required for GLA metabolism in particular. So, for Hydri, we've included all these nutrients because we've essentially sort of reverse engineered this one pathway. And we're trying to get to this specific prostaglandin rather than just, using one omega or something. We've really kind of thought through the process a little bit more carefully. So I think it's important to kind of look at the balance of nutrients and what else is needed.
I think that's great because if our patients taking specific nutrients, we want to make sure that they're getting absolutely absorbed by the body to use them, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yeah.
So Zach, I'm going to change it back and we're going to go back to the fish oils itself because there's a lot of our colleagues that just do fish oils. Is there something else you recommend in addition to fish oils? Actually, first, what is the optimal dosage and what does the literature say? If you have dry eye, you need this amount of EPA and DHA.
Well, there's not really one dosage that's kind of the home run because it's been a little bit all over the map. The DREAM study used a pretty high dose of omega-3s, 3 grams. I think common sort of retail formulas tend to use 1 to 2 grams more commonly. And the studies likewise have found a pretty wide range. There isn't an exact sort of like you have to use this amount and that's most optimal. But I would say that if you're going with omega-3s alone, that a couple thousand, milligrams of omega-3s minimum would probably be needed, maybe 3,000. The nice thing about using a different approach where you combine the GLA with a smaller amount of EPA and DHA is that you don't need a lot of GLA. So the 235 milligrams of GLA in Hydri is pretty robust, and a fairly small amount of EPA and DHA combined with that will kind of complement the GLA in promoting those anti-inflammatory pathways. And so you can do this without, having the patient take big horse pills or things like that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to add one more thing. What about krill oil? I've known of one study on krill oil and krill oil against sunflower oil, I believe, and then fish oil. Any comments on that?
Well, krill oil is, it uses a different form of omega-3, it uses the phospholipid form. Which may have some advantages. The problem with krill oil is it's very low concentration for omega-3s. So you'd have to take a lot of it to get the same amount of omega-3s. The phospholipid form is touted as being maybe more bioavailable. But it's really not enough sort of research out there to really say that that's really so superior or really to know kind of what it does in dry specifically. I think time will tell.
Well, that's exactly what I tell my patients.
Yeah.
So okay. We always have that patient who cannot take fish oils. And, even though I'd use a lot of GLA with the small amount of fish oils, do you have any suggestions? Because we're always going to have that patient that says, no, I can't take that. Well, what do you recommend in those cases?
Yes, if they have a fish allergy or they're vegan or something like that, they could certainly take, black currant seed oil, which is the source used in Hydri. It's not going to work as well as the right balance of omega-3s and Hydri, omega-3 and GLA and the other nutrient cofactors all combined. But it's certainly a good first step and might be better, might be better than nothing for those patients. So that's certainly something they could try.
Hey, you just mentioned flaxseed. Black currant seed. With flaxseed, because sometimes patients say, we ask, do you take your omegas? Oh yeah, I take flaxseed. Well, tell me why flaxseed is not the optimal treatment.
Well, flaxseed oil contains some omegas, but not all omegas are the same. And we tend to just sort of overgeneralize and lump things together, and it confuses things a lot. So the omegas that you find in flaxseed oil are also kind of the most abundant, accessible ones you might find in beef fat, in seed oils, and that kind of thing. So ALA, or alpha-linolenic acid, is the main omega-3 that's in flaxseed oil. And it's great. It's a good, it's a beneficial fat, and it's better to eat more of those kinds of fats than the, saturated fats and that kind of thing. But in terms of using it to treat an inflammatory condition like dry eye, you're not going to get a lot of mileage out of that, because the problem is it actually has to be converted in several steps to EPA from that you also find in fish oil. So the ALA, you can't produce those anti-inflammatory mediators from it directly. You have to convert it to EPA before you can use it for that. And only 10 to 20% of it, or actually less, gets there. So it's just not an efficient way to, when you're talking about a therapeutic application. And the same thing is true with the other sort of minor omega linoleic acid that's in flaxseed oil. So once again, eating flaxseed oil is probably good, changes the balance of your fats, maybe to more beneficial ones. But if you're treating a condition that's inflammatory, you kind of need something that's a little more efficient. So GLA or EPA would be better candidates here.
One of the conversations I have with my patients when they ask, well, can't I just eat fish? What's your take on that? Because I know what I tell them, but what do you say?
Well, I think eating fish is good. If you're being careful though about those fish like swordfish and tuna that can be high in mercury and heavy metals and that kind of thing. So you really have to watch out for that. Salmon is a fairly healthy fish. But even then, I think that there are nutrients beyond those that you could get from fish that I think are really helpful for dry eye. So, with Hydri, we try to kind of combine a combo of nutrients that really kind of work together synergistically in the right ratios, the right balance, that you might not get from just eating fish. But I still would encourage people to, eat something like salmon or something like that, but don't sort of pin your whole, approach to just one thing. It takes more than that.
All right, we want
the amount of fish you'd have to eat, right? Do you guys know how amount of fish you'd have to eat? Most of my patients could not eat
right. It
for it to reach a therapeutic level, or you literally be smelling what you're eating. So it's not possible when you're looking for therapeutic effects.
Yeah, and you also kind of break down the omega-3s when you cook it. So you lose something there. So you're not always getting as much as you think you are, depending upon how you cook it. Like if you pan sear it or something, you get to really high heat and you may be losing some of the omega-3 content.
Well, great. So Zach, do you have any final thoughts or pearls as we wrap up this podcast in regards to ocular nutrition and dry eyes?
Well, I think, one thing I'd like to kind of focus on just for a moment is just talk about, I think when we talk about all the things that are important in dry eye, we think about evaporative stress, hyperosmolarity, we talk about meibomian gland dysfunction, we talk about inflammation and all these things. I think it's important that, we don't really realize a lot of these, there's sort of this underlying kind of underpinning foundation of oxidative stress involved in all of these things. So when we're talking about the lipids and the meibomian glands becoming, more dense and viscous and sort of hardening up so you can't express them well, that's often because of lipid peroxidation. So we're talking about oxidative processes. And the tear film has some of the highest concentration of antioxidants of anywhere in your body. And there's a reason for that, because there's a lot of sort of stress that goes on at the ocular surface. So I think about, you know, thinking about oxidative stress, which means sort of the imbalance of antioxidants to oxidants, which could be oxygen or UV light, or but they're also generated during things that cause inflammation and you know, from surgery, you know, a laser used on the surface of the eye. So I think that, thinking about oxidative stress is really important. And so looking at, everyone should eat a diet that's really varied in fruits and veggies, lots of antioxidants, taking supplements that are rich in antioxidants, especially polyphenols, things you might get from green tea, chocolate, berries, red wine, although, you know, in moderation, but it's something I know all of us here love. But, you know, I think, you know, trying to kind of bring in stuff like that, and remember that these are actually sort of in the main wheelhouse of dry eye. They're involved with everything you're dealing with in dry eye.
Hey, well, perfect. Hey, thank you so much there, Zach. We always learn. I always learn something new every single time I have this discussion with you, and I know Tracy does as well. So we appreciate your time and expertise to address these ocular nutrition myth busters or questions that many of us have. And for all of you, thank you for listening. And please join us for our next episode, which is coming soon, and as well as find us online at dryeyecoach.com and at all major podcast platforms. So thank you all very much.
Thanks, you guys. It's been fun.